And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 1230 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. You know, there was a period of a couple of hours today when I was almost totally convinced it was Wednesday. And did you ever have one of those days where I couldn't get it out of my head? Tuesday, December 12th. Well, I guess the change in the weather makes it pretty easy to get a little bit confused. We are finally in winter mode, and it took a while. You know, there are many years where we have this sort of weather by Thanksgiving. You know, I mean, it doesn't happen every Thanksgiving, but I can remember Thanksgivings where we had 6 inches of snow and a really, really deep freeze. And, you know, here we are going on 2 weeks into December already, and this is really the first blast of winter that we've had. Now, there have been a couple of times, in fact, even back in November, there were a couple of days where people said, they call from up in Eau Claire or Harrisville and say, snowing up here. But it was brief, and it really didn't amount to much. We had one day in the city of Butler during the daytime hours where we got what the weather folks would call a dusting, you know, on the rooftops of the parked cars and a little bit on the grassy areas. But again, it was gone 2 hours later. This is the first, all across western Pennsylvania, the first really winter storm that we've had. There'll be others that are a lot worse than this. We could get a couple of inches by the end of the day today. We could get another inch overnight. But then again, maybe not. We're watching the radar. I've been watching it all morning, and it's spotty. You know, we had steady snow, but very light snow for much of the overnight. Started about 2 or 3 in the morning. And it really didn't amount to much here in the Butler area. Now, in other parts of Butler County, northern Butler County, they were getting hit pretty hard. And by 6:30 this morning, they had already had an accident on West El Dorado Road involving a snow plow and a car. So they were plowing snow already at 6:30 in the morning. That's in Parker Township. It's in northern part of Butler County. At that hour, we had practically nothing on the ground here in Butler. It was light snow, but no problem. Salt trucks were out early. That didn't help everywhere. There were some places where roads got iced up as we moved toward 8:30 and 9 o'clock, 9:30. And we had some more road closings. So, you know, it's a winter storm, all right. Not the worst we'll ever see. And, of course, it's the first one, so that means that a lot of people, you know, you forget how to drive in the wintertime. You don't slow down enough. You don't give yourself enough time to stop at a stop sign, and you slide a little bit, you know. Be careful. Yeah, be careful. And as Tracy just said, the temperature has started down now, and we're going to get very, very cold this afternoon. We're down to 26. We had, 33 this morning. So, yeah, we're down several degrees already, and we'll be down into the teens by late afternoon today. Wind is going to kick up. Get out the mittens and the heavy coat. We have a varied lineup of guests today. Our first guest is, she's almost like an old friend. Sarah Jensen is the senior editor at the World Almanac and the Book of Facts. And I think we've talked with Sarah probably 4 or 5 times, pretty much every year at this time. The new World Almanac comes out in early December each year. So we'll chat with her. She's not quite ready to join us yet. We'll be talking with her on the telephone. Do you use the World Almanac and Book of Facts? Yeah, it's handy. I keep mine on my desk. It's handy, and it's not something that you pick up and read through like a novel. You grab it when you need to find some information, or if you have a couple of minutes to kill, you can pick it up. So we'll talk to Sarah about the new edition. It's the 2018 edition of the World Almanac and Book of Facts. Also today, whatever happened to Jimmy Hoffa? Jimmy Hoffa. Well, we know he was killed. I'm not sure they've ever found the body. I don't think so. But we're going to talk to a guy who says he knows who killed Jimmy Hoffa. He says there was a conspiracy surrounding his death, and he knows who did it. And he claims it was Frank the Irishman Sheeran. And you love these names in the crime world. Charles Brandt is the guy that we'll talk to. He has written a book on this, and it's already being made into a movie. Netflix is producing it, and I don't know whether you subscribe to Netflix or not, but they've got some of the best movies going these days, their original productions. I don't know how they afford to get all the big-name stars that they get, but they do. Who's in this one? Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, Martin Scorsese. These are huge names. So I'm not quite sure when the movie, it's in what they call pre-production, so I don't think they've started shooting yet. But we'll talk about the plot, obviously, with Charles Brandt, who will be joining us a little bit later. He's a former prosecutor in New York City, I think, East Harlem. So he'll be with us later on the program today. Got to ask him, too, about, I don't know, maybe there have been more than one film on Jimmy Hoffa. The one that I remember is the Jack Nicholson film from about, I want to say, 10 years ago. Did you see that, Pat Parker? Just called Hoffa. Oh, it's good. It's good. I don't like everything Nicholson does these days. I don't know. I guess I'm kind of tired of him. But he nailed Jimmy Hoffa. I mean, he looked like him. You know, of course, the makeup people. He talked like him. It was a fantastic film. But it ended kind of, you know, with a question mark. What happened? And it's not a new movie. So I'll ask Mr. Brandt about that. Whether he thinks that was accurate or not. And then there's still more on the program a little bit later today. We're going to talk with a woman who... She is a yoga instructor. Do you know much about yoga? No, I don't either. I know what it is. At least I think I know what it is. And there are yoga classes around here. It's becoming more popular. I think there are some at the Y. I know there are some at the Y. They've had them for years. There's even a new business in downtown Butler. It's a yoga. They have yoga classes. Downtown. I think it's in the same building as the Working Man's store, I believe. So I don't know. I've never practiced it. We'll talk with a woman. She's a yoga instructor. She's out on the West Coast. Her name is Keetski Hawk. And she's been teaching yoga for a long time, 20, 30 years. And she is a recovering addict. And she says yoga can be used very effectively for recovery. Someone who's battling addiction. So I thought it would be worth a shot to talk to her. We have such an incredible addiction problem, especially opioids, here in our area right now. Who knows? There are families desperately searching for anything that would help a loved one who's battling addiction. So we'll see what she has to say. She'll be our final guest. That's coming up later on the program today. And a program note, as we get ready to talk to Sarah Jensen, we're going to be moving Book Talk up a week this month. And there's a very simple reason for that. Book Talk is ordinarily on the fourth Monday of the month. And in this month of December, the fourth Monday is Christmas Day. So that's not going to work. So we're going to do it next Monday instead. That's the 18th. the week before Christmas, and it's a holiday book, a Christmas book, that we will be discussing on Book Talk, Finding Noel, by Richard Paul Evans. And it's a nice, heartwarming story that's appropriate for the holidays. Not all about Christmas, but it's appropriate. Could be one of those Hallmark Christmas movies for sure. So that'll be with Kathy Klein from North Trails Library. And again, that'll be this coming Monday, a week earlier. We usually end up moving Book Talk in December because it almost always conflicts with either Christmas, Christmas Eve, the day after Christmas, 25th of December is right in there. We sometimes have to move it in May, too, because of Memorial Day. But it'll be this coming Monday. Book Talk, Finding Noel. Kathy Klein tells me it's an incredibly popular book, and an earlier book by the same author called The Christmas Box. She said there are many, many, many copies of that in libraries within the Butler County Library System. Very popular guy. So that's coming up next Monday, this coming Monday. Okay, we had best take a break here and get set to talk with Sarah Jensen, the senior editor of the World Almanac and Book of Facts for 2018. One of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program today, DBS Telecom. DBS Telecommunications is the official name. They're a telephone equipment dealer and a data network installer serving the entire Butler area. In fact, they serve the Pittsburgh area as well, all of western Pennsylvania. DBS Telecommunications. They sell, install, and repair telephones for your office, primarily installing commercial telephone and voicemail systems. They've been around for a while. They're not newcomers. DBS has been serving the Butler area for more than 30 years now. They specialize in phone systems. They do custom-designed networks, including fiber optics, which is, of course, the latest technology. They do high-quality hybrid digital telephone systems, lengthy warranties there. They do high-def surveillance camera systems. Boy, almost everybody needs a security system these days, right? They also handle multi-door entry access systems and overhead commercial paging. In addition, they provide cabling service for voice, for data, for cable television wiring in both industrial and commercial applications. We use DBS Telecommunications here at the Butler Radio Network. We have their technicians in every once in a while. I see them updating and doing stuff for us, so we know them very well. Give you a phone number here. You can call DBS Telecommunications for more information on their services, see if they can help you. Phone number is 724-285-9088. Or you can check them out online at dbs-tel.com. DBS Telecommunications.
Concordia Visiting Nurses is a Medicare-certified home health agency offering services provided by healthcare professionals like registered and licensed practical nurses, physical, speech, and occupational therapists, home health aides, and many more. We also provide specialty services like palliative care and telehealth monitoring. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
Are you searching for the perfect holiday gift for someone you care about? Well, look no further. Personalized photo calendars from Sir Speedy Printing are great gifts that last the whole year. Everyone will love the personal touch that you were able to put into your gift and appreciate the memories that come back with every picture you chose. Be the hero of holiday gifts with the help of Sir Speedy Printing on South Main Street in Butler. Stop in or give us a call today.
Listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, welcome, by the way. If you're joining us a little bit late, that's fine. My name is Dave Malarkey. We're pleased to be able to chat once again with the senior editor of the World Almanac. She is Sarah Jensen. Hi, Sarah. Nice to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you again.
We always like to chat with you around this time of the year because the World Almanac and the Book of Facts makes such a wonderful stocking stuffer. I'm sure you would agree.
Absolutely, provided your stocking is big enough to hold all 1,008 pages of the World Almanac, we've got you covered.
It is a go-to source, that's no question about it, and my copy sits right on my desk throughout the year. So we'll talk a little bit about some of the standard features that have been in for a while, but I always like to talk with you about the new things that appear. Obviously, if you're looking for this at a bookstore or places where books are sold, the title is going to say World Almanac and a Book of Facts 2018. And Sarah, you do want to look for that because there are imitators, right?
There are a few other almanacs out there, but I think the World Almanac always really stands out as, you know, the one that you spot first on the shelf just because it is such a familiar presence, and a lot of people do buy it every year.
Absolutely. So we are, hard to believe, 1 year past the Obama presidency, the 8 years of Barack Obama. I understand that's one of your review articles in the new edition.
The World Almanac actually does this after every presidency. We sort of take a step back after the president has left office and then just do a quick review of all of the accomplishments, maybe some of the missteps, some of the policy changes, and just see, you know, what happened during those 8 years. 8 years can feel like a pretty long time, and a lot can change over the course of a two-term presidency. So I think that people will find it really useful to get a just-the-facts approach to the Obama presidency, which, of course, is a highly politicized, discussion usually.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We have had a series now of two-term presidents, Clinton, Bush, W, and then Barack Obama, all serving consecutive terms. The maximum these days.
The maximum, yes. No more FDRs yeah. will be a coming.
It's interesting. I was reading about, just a little parenthetical, but I was reading about FDR earlier this year, and yes, he was elected 4 times, but he really didn't serve much more than 3 terms. He was quite ill when he was elected for the 4th time, and he died not long after he was, you know, inaugurated for that 4th term, which I had not realized before.
Yeah, his presidency was only a little over 12 years, so yeah, it is more like a 3-term, but, mm-hmm. you know, he did win 4 elections.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And it was because of him that we changed the law. So let's talk a little bit about other historical anniversaries. That's always been a part of the World Almanac. Is that a regular feature again this year?
Oh, absolutely. And actually, one of the historical anniversaries that we're most excited about is that this year is our 150th anniversary. So
oh, wow.
We decided to actually expand that section. We've got some fun milestones from the past 150 years and a little celebration of our own history because we're pretty proud of the fact that we've made it this far.
Oh, rightly so, for goodness sakes. Can you give us a little capsule history? Where and when did the World Almanac get started? This would have been obviously a long time ago, probably the eastern part of the country back then, right?
Yes, indeed. So the World Almanac began in 1868, was the first edition, and it was actually a product of a New York-based newspaper called The World. It was one of the Pulitzer newspapers back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually only published sort of on and off in the 1870s, but it was revived toward the later half of that decade, and we have been publishing annually ever since. That first edition was only about 100 pages, and definitely looks like a book from the 1860s. You can actually find a copy of it if you go to our website, which is worldalmanac.com.
And how many pages in the World Almanac and Book of Facts for 2018?
The 2018 edition is 1,008 pages, so we've expanded what we cover quite a bit, and we've expanded the size of the book quite a bit.
Hmm. The interesting fact that I just learned from you is the name. I did not know that it was originally published by the newspaper The World. I always thought The World Almanac referred to, like, you know, all the world, the universe, whatever. It actually comes from the newspaper, huh?
Yeah.
Are you still
to mean that as well, because we do cover so many different topics.
Mm-hmm.
But absolutely, that's how the name first originated, as calling itself after its founding newspaper.
However, you do have a feature that's called the World at a Glance, and that's handy. Most of the stuff that's the facts that are in your book are condensed, so that if you need something in a hurry, you don't have to spend half a day reading it, right?
Absolutely. So what we seek to do with any given topic, whether it's pop culture or sports or history or health or population information, we try to give you the essential and authoritative fact on that subject so you can find the information quickly, or so that you can just sort of stumble your way around the book and find things that you wouldn't have thought to look up very quickly.
Mm-hmm. You always take a look at the top news topics of the previous year. What are some of those that were chosen by your staff to highlight from 2017?
Well, it was definitely a busy year. Obviously, we had a new president, so that was something that was dominating the headlines year-long, not just the fact that we have a new president, but there were a lot of policy shifts, a new Supreme Court justice nominated, that kind of thing. We also consider the North Korea nuclear sort of crisis or events around that as to be one of the top news stories of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, when we're choosing these, generally we're looking at things dominating headlines, but we're also looking at what stories are going to have an impact on the upcoming year, what stories do we think will maybe even have more impact when you look going forward. Some of the other stories in that top 10 include the Russian election investigation, some of the congressional actions, which, you know, we're coming down to the wire here at the end of the year, so we're still paying attention to that, and then a lot of the terrible natural disasters that were dominating headlines in 2018, the three massive hurricanes that affected the Caribbean and the United States, but also the wildfires out west, which, again, are still continuing here in December.
The year in sports is always reviewed. Now, here in Western Pennsylvania, if you asked people who won the Stanley Cup last year, everybody would know instantly that it was the Pittsburgh Penguins. But a couple of months ago, I was trying to think of who won the World Series. last year, I couldn't come up with it. You have literally hundreds of pages of sports statistics from the previous year, right?
Yeah, sports stats are always a lot of fun, and it's also a lot of fun when you're spending a lot of your time focusing on more serious stories to be able to sort of transition to some of the great sports stories from the year. I mean, the Super Bowl is so much fun this year because it was actually a fantastic game, mm-hmm. and the first overtime Super Bowl ever played. There was a bunch of great stories in tennis because of some of the veterans coming back from, you know, some off seasons and actually winning more Grand Slams. So it was actually a really exciting year to watch sports. Also, it should be noted, Russell Westbrook's season last year was just so much fun to watch. So we're looking forward to more fun sports to cover in the upcoming editions.
I forgot about tennis. Roger Federer made a big comeback. A lot of folks thought he wouldn't be world class anymore, and he certainly was. You have something called World Almanac Editor's Picks, Greatest Single Season Performances. What's that all about, Sarah?
Well, actually, we were sort of jumping off of Russell Westbrook's season. He had 42 triple-doubles and a season-long triple-double, which has actually only happened once before. But it was still absolutely up for debate whether it was one of the greatest single seasons ever played. So we decided to look at that question in other sports as well, to look at other athletes that are considered to have, you know, superlative years, superlative seasons. And it was really fun to go through and debate, and I think the list will spark a lot of debate among readers when they check it out.
What about population figures? What's the population of Germany? Do you still have that? You still have that? Well, you know, with Brexit and the European Union and the new presidents being elected in France and the new prime minister in the UK, yeah, these questions pop up, and you've got the answers there.
Oh, absolutely. You're always going to find tons of population statistics, tons of coverage of the world, an article about every country in the world, about every state in the Union, about the 100 largest cities in the United States. We're always going to have that type of coverage for, you know, people to take a look at a country that might be in the so familiar with. You know, there are technically 196 nations, and you can't be intimately acquainted with all of them, probably. So it's nice to be able to look up a country that you hear about in the news and find out more about not just its geography, but its people and how people make their livings there.
Speaking of 196 nations, do you still have the flag pages?
Oh, absolutely. The maps and flag pages are tons of fun. We also have the year in pictures every year, which is also a full-color section, and that'll give you like a really fantastic view of events that happened in 2017, not just in news, but in sports and pop culture, including a nice spread of what we call our farewells page, which is a spread showing people who have passed away in the past year. It's just a nice way to be able to commemorate everything that happened in 2017.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, somebody asked me on the program just a few weeks back. I don't know how it came up, but they're asking about the Look magazine and Life magazine, and I said, no, they're not here anymore. But I forgot you have those full-color photographs in the World Almanac every year. Yeah. The World Almanac and the Book of Facts. There's another feature that I like to mention, and I want to put you on the spot in case you can't think of it. You have a thing called Offbeat News Stories every year, which are always good for a few laughs. Do you happen off the top of your head to remember any of those, Sarah?
Oh, definitely. This is one of the more fun sections to put together every year as well, just because it's really fun to be able to check out some smaller town newspapers and find, you know, the stories that definitely didn't make it to CNN. I think my favorite this year actually did get a little bit more attention, but we had to include it anyway. The story is about the King of the Netherlands, who it turns out has been working sort of discreetly or covertly as a commercial airline pilot for the past several decades. So you may have flown in a commercial jet by the King of the Netherlands at some point.
I forgot about that story. I saw just a little clip on that some months ago, yeah. Well, there's lots of other offbeat news stories, too. What about the form? I've always had the big paperback edition of the World Almanac and Book of Facts because it sits very comfortably on my desk. Are there other forms, Sarah?
Yeah, so you can get the World Almanac 2018 edition in the paperback edition, but you can also get it in a hardcover, which has a slightly larger print for people who want to be able to get into that way. We also have an e-book edition, which is available for any type of e-reader or tablet you might use, and that is available wherever books are sold as well.
Mm-hmm. And it's just published, folks. It's pretty typical, right? December is the month that they publish it. You have to wait till the end of the year because you've got to get all the stuff in from the previous year.
Absolutely. You have to get it all in, including World Series results. So getting it done by and in stores by early December every year is definitely a challenge, but something that we will continue to do going forward, hopefully.
And as we said at the beginning of our conversation, if you got a fairly big stocking, well, it doesn't have to fit in there. You know, you could put it underneath the stocking. The World Almanac and Book of Facts 2018. Sarah Jansen is senior editor of the World Almanac. Thanks again, Sarah, for talking with us today. Good to have you with us again.
Thank you so much for having me again. I always look forward to it.
Hearing Aid Service by Kelly, one of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program. Hearing Aid Service by Kelly. Maybe there's somebody in your family who is starting to have more and more difficulty hearing. Maybe it's you. Maybe it's somebody else. Maybe you've noticed that they constantly want the TV up a little louder to hear, where it's getting uncomfortably loud for some other people. Or here's another thing that sometimes happens. You have difficulty picking up conversation in a room where other people are talking, or where there's other noise. You know that somebody's talking to you, but you can't, you know what I'm talking about. Well, maybe it's time that you gave a call to Kelly and consulted with her. It's personalized one-on-one care with Hearing Aid Service by Kelly. Personalized one-on-one. Let me tell you this. She is not interested in selling you the highest priced hearing aid. She is interested in helping you to hear better and to make sure that your hearing aid is comfortable to wear. It'll be actually measured to fit your ear and your ear alone. complimentary consultation will get you started. People who have made the change or consulted with Kelly are so pleased and so happy that they did. And it all starts with a phone call. Call the hearing aid lady. Call Hearing Aid Service by Kelly. Phone number 724-756-4327. 724-756-4327. Much more to come on the It's Your Turn program today. Coming up next, in just a moment or so, we're going to be chatting with Charles Brandt, who is a former prosecutor in New York City, part of New York City, one of the five boroughs. He's a trial lawyer, and he says he knows who killed Jimmy Hoffa. Been controversial for years, for decades, actually. And he's written a book about it, and they're already in pre-production for a movie from his book. So it's a pretty fascinating story, and it's one that's really, you know, fascinated a lot of people down through the years. There were thoughts, remember when they built Giant Stadium in New York City? Well, actually, it's in New Jersey, just across the river from New York City. It's not called that anymore. I think it's MetLife Stadium now. I'm not sure. But both the New York football Giants and the New York Jets play there. There were rumors that Jimmy Hoffa's body had been put in the cement, you know, in the foundations of that stadium. I don't think they ever proved that. Probably just conspiracy theory. But who actually killed him? Well, our next guest says he knows. So stick with us. We'll be talking in just a moment here to Charles Brandt on the It's Your Turn program here on WISR, the Tuesday edition. We'll be right back.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to Mom. But a little over a year ago, we realized she couldn't take care of herself without our help. And, well, how could I not be there for her? I had no idea how hard it would be and just what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and, even for me, ways to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics that got me started, but also information about the hurdles I was facing in this new role. I could even connect with experts and hear from others who had been in my place. I know this road we're on isn't an easy one, but I'm really happy to have the extra help for her and for me. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. This message is brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Listeners, we're going to be talking about Jimmy Hoffa and the mysterious death of Jimmy Hoffa on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Charles Brandt. He joins us by telephone. Mr. Brandt, nice to meet you. It's terrific to have you with us for a few minutes here today, sir.
Thank you.
Jimmy Hoffa is a name known by, I would dare say, 95% of the people in America, even younger people. But the mystery surrounding his sudden disappearance, well, it's been a mystery for the last 40 years. What really happened is known to only one living person, mafia enforcer Frank the Irishman Sheeran, who refused multiple requests to disclose the truth until he spoke with author Charles Brandt. How in the heck did you ever get him to talk to you, Mr. Brandt?
Well, he was the number one suspect in Hoffa's disappearance, and the FBI hounded him into jail for labor racketeering.
Mm-hmm.
The way they hounded Al Capone for tax evasion. They couldn't get him for the Hoffa disappearance, but they gave him a 32 years worth of jail time. And he was serving that. He was about 70 years old, and I got a call from someone in the Philly mob. Frank the Irishman had a lot of health problems, and the Philly mob wanted to retain me and get Frank out of jail early on medical parole. Well, I did that, and Frank took me to lunch. When he got out, he was thrilled. I chopped off close to 15 years of the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he was tired of being written about in all the books on Jimmy's disappearance. because he was the number one suspect, all the books speculated as to what role he may have played in Hoffa's disappearance. He said he was tired of it, and he had read a book I had written. In a prior life, I'd been a homicide investigator, and I wrote a book called The Right to Remain Silent about those cases that I cracked through interrogation. I taught interrogation to cops, and I taught cross-examination to other lawyers. And as soon as Frank said to me that he wanted me to write, he read my book, The Right to Remain Silent, in prison, and he wanted me to write a kind of whitewash and clear him of any role in the Hoffa disappearance. And as soon as he said that, I had a feeling this guy had something he wanted to get off his chest. And I met with him, and I met with him over a five-year period. We met frequently.
Wow.
And I was absolutely right. He wanted to get the Hoffa head off his chest. He was very close to Hoffa. And the mob does that. They give you the assignment to kill when they know that you can get close to the man and lure him in. And Frank lured him into a car to take him to a meeting. And when they got to the meeting house in Detroit, Hoffa walked in. He could tell there was nobody there. There was not going to be a meeting. And he turned around to try to head out the front door the way they'd come in. And Frank shot him twice in the back of the head. And Frank said to me that if I ever said no to the mafia boss, Russell Bufalino, Jimmy would have been just as dead. And I'd have been killed, too. I'd have gone to Australia, was the term used. The name of the book is The Right to Remain Silent. The name of the book that I wrote as a result of Frank's interest in The Right to Remain Silent is called I Heard You Paint Houses, and that's a euphemistic way of saying I kill people.
Wow.
Paint with the blood that spatters on the walls and the floor. And those were the first words uttered by Jimmy Hoffa to Frank Sheeran when Hoffa, in 1957, when Hoffa took over the Teamsters. There were some people he wanted to get rid of. And so he consulted his mafia ally, Russell Bufalino, and Russell Bufalino lent Frank Sheeran to Jimmy Hoffa. And the first words were, I heard you paint houses.
Wow.
That's being made into a movie right now as we speak. They're filming it in New York. Scorsese's directing it. De Niro's going to play going to play Frank the Irish Sheeran. Al Pacino's going to play Jimmy Hoffa. Joe Pesci's going to play Russell Bufalino. Ray Romano is in it. Harvey Keitel. Bobby Cannavale. Anna Paquin. It's a star-studded cast.
I guess so. Wow. Do you have any idea when that movie's going to be released or be shown?
2019.
Okay.
Netflix is producing it. They do feature films as well as the streaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
They're behind it.
Wow.
$125 million project.
Wow. And here we have 40 years after Hoffa's disappearance and still... the interest is there to the point where they're willing to spend that kind of money on a film. Listeners, a little bit more about our guest. Charles Brandt was a little bit modest when he mentioned his work as a lawyer. He's done a lot of things. Even at one time in life, he was an English teacher. But he was also a homicide prosecutor later. He was the chief deputy attorney general of the state of Delaware and then went into private practice. He's been president of the Delaware Trial Lawyers Association, and he was named by his peers to both the best lawyers in America and the best lawyers in Delaware. So pretty extensive CV there for our guest, Charles Brandt, the author of I Heard You Paint Houses. Now, I'm a little bit unclear, Mr. Brandt, on is your book already out and the movie's to come out in a couple of years? Is your book just being published now, too? What's the timeline on all this?
Well, the book was, the first edition of the book was published in 2004.
I see.
But we've had three editions since. The most recent came out about a year ago, and it added 57 pages to the book. what has happened is that over the years, various mobsters either died or went to jail, or in one case, in one significant case, became cooperating witness for the FBI. And I didn't want to write about these people as long as they were alive and active and out there doing their thing. Frank was telling them that I was writing a book for him that would clear him of any involvement in Hoffa. In the meantime, Frank knew that on a regular basis, he was serially confessing many major crimes to me, including the killing of Crazy Joey Gallo in Umberto's Clam House, one of the famous mob hits. There have been two movies on it, and they got him wrong. Frank was the lone killer. The two movies claimed there were three killers that burst in on Crazy Joey at Umberto's and killed him. It was Frank as the lone killer, and as my luck would have it, and it's been very lucky with this film and this book, when the book first came out in 2004, an editor, a very prestigious editor at the New York Times, saw the book and saw the picture of Frank Sheeran. Well, she had been at Umberto's that night, and she had seen and witnessed it and knew that it was a single gunman, not three gunmen. And she saw the picture of Frank in my book, and she said it gave her chills, and she recognized him as the gunman who came in from the side door and began shooting at Gallo. Hmm. And the movie people at a meeting in New York met with her and got her story. But I also got her story for one of the more recent editions of the book.
Listeners, we have a few more minutes that we're able to chat with Charles Brandt. We do have to take a quick break here, though, so let's do that, and we'll be back and pick up our conversation with Charles Brandt here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. Fascinating story. Jimmy Hoffa. Who really killed Jimmy Hoffa? One of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program today, Jones Turkey Farm. Folks, I've been telling you about Jones Turkey Farm this holiday season. Their turkeys are just, well, they're terrific. They're quite simply the best, and there's a reason for that. Well, first of all, it's local, so, you know, you're never going to get them any fresher. They're in Cabot, Jones Turkey Farm. They offer all-natural, free-roaming turkeys and chickens. Their birds are handled with extreme care. They are specifically fed non-GMO grain. They are preservative-free. They are additive-free. That's why they taste so good. Now, you can buy your turkey frozen, or you can get it fresh right before the big holiday meal, your choice. Owner Dave Jones stakes his reputation on his turkeys being the best. Now, there's a special going on as we approach this holiday season, but you'll have to hurry to take advantage of it. Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot, Jones Road in Cabot, from now through December 19th. This is December 12th, so you got a week. The Jones Turkey Farm is lowering the price of a frozen turkey from $3.25 per pound down to just $2.50. That's right. Best turkeys in western Pennsylvania, and they can be yours for $2.50 a pound now through December 19th. Get all the details on this special offer by visiting their website, jonesturkeyfarm.com. jonesturkeyfarm.com. Make your holiday season merry by getting a Jones turkey for the whole family to enjoy. Jones Road in Cabot, the Jones Turkey Farm, quite simply the best.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back. Just joining us. That's fine. My name is Dave Malarkey. On this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we're talking with Charles Brandt. He is the author of I Heard You Paint Houses. And the new edition of that book is just recently published. And also in production now is a movie called The Irishman, Netflix producing, with a star-studded cast that tells the story. Mr. Brandt, what we know many times when a movie script comes out, it's been changed quite a bit. Are there significant differences from your book, I Heard You Paint Houses, and the shooting script for the film?
No. I had the thrill of participating in the script meetings with the great Steve Zalian, who won an Oscar for Schindler's List. He's a scriptwriter. Bob De Niro and Marty Scorsese and I would meet during a 2-month period last summer, and they were very anxious to make it as realistic as possible. And while I'm not involved right now, except at least I'm physically there, I live in Idaho. I'm back home a couple of times a week. I'll get a call from a woman, Marianne Bowers, who's their researcher.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll have questions for me that about the authenticity of ideas that they might have. And it's a fascinating project, and fascinating for me. At the age of 75, I thought I've got 4 grandchildren. I thought I had all I needed. And then the next thing you know, this book that I published in 2004 is now the toast of the town. And they're just wonderful people. You know, I grew up in New York City and was raised Italian. My mother's maiden name was DeMarco, and my father kind of assimilated into the Italian family. In fact, we used to call Pittsburgh Pittsburgh. My grandparents couldn't read or write Italian, much less English. And my mother had, there were 11 kids, you know. They had a little farm in Staten Island. And I would have been a year ahead of Scorsese in school, 2 years ahead of De Niro. And the first time we met in 2009, we hit it off instantly with that kind of Italian background in New York City. In those days, in the 1950s, when rock and roll was a new concept, and it's been fun.
I have to ask you about a previous film. I'm sure there have been more than one about Hoffa, but the one that I remember was the Jack Nicholson film. It's probably 15 or 20 years ago. It was called simply Hoffa. Are you familiar with that film? Have you seen it? And is it accurate?
Oh, sure. Well, it's accurate in the sense that Frank the Irishman Sheeran told me that Jack Nicholson really nailed the portrayal of Hoffa.
Mm-hmm.
I never met Hoffa, but the rest of it was nonsense. I can't repeat what Frank said about it.
Well, they never actually, I've seen that film a couple of times, and they never actually show Hoffa's murder. They show Jack Nicholson getting into a car in a parking lot at a restaurant in Detroit, and then bang, that's it. That's the end of the film. So, but I just wanted to
know. They actually show what they purport to be Hoffa in the car, and then it's driven into a truck, driven up into a truck, and then taken away. They don't show you him getting hit. They just show him being driven away.
Can you tell us, not only me, but I'm sure many of our listeners, even who, you know, folks who know the name Jimmy Hoffa straight away, we might not be familiar with the events that led up to his disappearance, to his murder. Can you talk a little bit about that? Was he on the outs with either the Teamsters or the mob bosses at the time? Why did they have him killed?
Well, he was on the outs with the mob bosses of the time. He had been put in jail by Bobby Kennedy. This book is a biography. It's a biography of Frank Sheeran, but there were so many things that Frank was involved in, and Frank was very close to Jimmy Hoffa. Bobby Kennedy went after Hoppe. He created a, he was the Attorney General, President Kennedy's brother, and got Hoppe into jail in 1967. Hoppe got out of jail through a pardon that was given to him by Richard Nixon, and the Irishman, Frank Sheeran, delivered $500,000 to Nixon's ally, John Mitchell, in Washington, D.C. And when Hoppe got out of jail, he wanted to take the union back. There was a new president at the time, Frank Fitzsimmons, and Hoppe was very reckless with his comments. He was accusing Fitzsimmons of being too cozy with the mafia and allowing the mafia to take over the Teamsters. And it was campaign rhetoric, but it was dangerous rhetoric. And one of the techniques that an interrogator uses is when you're dealing with a murderer, you make it seem as if it's the victim's fault that he got killed. He made all the wrong moves. And I had an easy time of doing that with Frank. You know, I said, look, Frank, I'd have killed him. I mean, he's going around there threatening people like Russell Bufalino and Fat Tony Salerno with this campaign rhetoric. And it got too much. And so they just felt he was trying to take the union back, trying to run for president again, and they just wouldn't have it.
Now, you say,
so they lured him.
You say in your book, and again, listeners, if you joined us a little bit late, the title of Charles Brandt's book is I Heard You Paint Houses, which is a euphemistic term, as he described earlier in our conversation. In your book, you say that Frank the Irishman Sheeran tried to warn Hoppe of what was about to happen. Isn't that rather strange, since it turns out that he's the guy that actually killed him?
It is and it isn't. Frank loved Jimmy Hoppe, and Frank's future as a Teamsters officer and an ally of Hoppe's in this dispute was guaranteeing him a terrific future in the union. And here he was now told by Russell Bufalino that he had to kill Hoppe. He said, I couldn't say no to Russell. You can't say no to something like that or you're dead. I'd have gone to Australia with Jimmy if I said no. And it haunted. That hit was the hit that haunted Frank and that basically delivered him to me. Frank was raised a strict Catholic. His father went to seminary school for 5 years. His mother went to Mass every morning. And before World War II, Frank had done nothing wrong. He was like a Huckleberry Finn character growing up in the suburb of Philadelphia, Upper Darby. And in the war, Frank ended up in what General Patton called my killer division. And he was instructed, the entire division was instructed, not to take German prisoners. They were to be the most feared division in the army. And Frank was taught that if the lieutenant said to him, take this prisoner behind the line for questioning, Frank would take the prisoner behind the line for questioning. But if the lieutenant added, hurry back, that meant Frank was to kill the guy pretty quickly.
Mm. Did Frank Sheehan himself die a natural death, Charles?
Yeah, everything that I have was on audio tape. And Frank agreed to do one videotape for me, and this was toward the end of his life. I'd spent 5 years with him. And after the videotape was done, and I had him consulting his criminal lawyer all the time to make it clear that my role was as a journalist, not as a lawyer. And he spoke to his lawyer. He did the interview on tape. And then he stopped eating. He killed himself. He told his son-in-law, I'm checking out, Mike. And he was dead in 6 weeks. It was a penance. In fact, his talking to me was a confessional similar to what goes on in the Catholic religion. I was raised Catholic, and I knew enough to exploit that in my time with Frank.
When the first edition of your book came out, saying that Frank the Irishman Sheeran was in fact the guy who shot Jimmy Hoffa, did law enforcement express any interest? Because they obviously they'd been searching. You know, they've been trying to solve this mystery for decades. Did they express any interest in you or your book?
Oh yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. The book was in hardback the first year, and then it went into paperback, one of the number of editions we've had. The new edition has 57 additional pages because of all the stuff we learned once the book came out, and because certain gangsters had died over the years, and I could talk about them. Anyway, I was at a book signing when the paperback came out a year after the hardback. And a gentleman gave me his book and said, could you make that out to Bob Garrity? And I said, how do I know your name? And he said, well, I was the FBI Hoffa case agent. I was in charge of the Hoffa case. And I said to him, well, you're not going anywhere. Have a seat. And we became fast friends. And he told me that they always liked Hoffa. They always liked Sheeran for the Hoffa hit, but they couldn't get anything on him. And he said to me that the Hoffa kids, Jimmy had two children, a son who's now president of the Teamsters Union, and a daughter who became a judge in St. Louis. And, you know, Frank, according to what Bob Garrity told me, the Hoffa kids thought that the sun rose and set on Frank Sheeran. Sheeran was a really tough man, and a tough ally, and a great ally to have. And Jimmy really valued Frank, as did Jimmy's family.
So the FBI kind of thought that it was Sheeran that killed him, but his kids never suspected him, huh? Wow.
The kids, yeah, you know, Frank said to me many times that what bothered him more than anything was he had to call Jimmy's wife when the news came out that Jimmy had disappeared, and he had to offer his support and how sad it made him that Jimmy didn't come home. And Frank said that act that I had to put on still bothers me to this day.
Wow. Listeners, it's a fascinating story. And again, the new edition of Charles Brandt's book is out. The title is I Heard You Paint Houses, and it's being used as the main source for a Netflix-produced movie that all-star cast. The movie has a different title. The working title is The Irishman, but it's the same story of Frank the Irishman Sheeran. Charles Brandt has been our guest. He's the author of I Heard You Paint Houses. The book is available, Charles, the usual places we find books these days, I assume?
Very much so.
All right.
Yep.
Nice to talk with you, sir. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. So long now. That is a fascinating story. I've read a lot of, crime novels, and you hear that story. It's like a novel, isn't it? Like The Godfather. And that last part that Charles Brandt was conveying there, the man he says killed Jimmy Hoffa, Frank the Irishman Sheeran, then called Hoffa's wife to offer his support. That's an amazing story. I can't wait to see the movie either, which is in pre-production right now, in case you weren't with us for the beginning of our conversation with Charles Brandt. And he said Netflix is producing the movie. Netflix folks, you know, started out as a streaming service. It still is. But, man, they do. I don't know how they afford to get the casts they get for some of their movies. You look at the nominations for the Golden Globes and the Screen Actors Guild's awards, and, it, you know, it's dominated now by Netflix and Amazon and HBO. Anyway, Martin Scorsese directing the film, signed to direct it. Some of the stars, Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, Ray Romano. A lot of them in you know, Goodfellas or Godfather, Ray Romano, not. He was in Everybody Loves Raymond, so that'll be a bit of a change for him. Anyway, and I never heard that phrase before, you know, because I've read quite a few books on the mob and the crime bosses and so on. I heard you paint houses. I heard you paint houses. That's a code for, you know, you're a hitman. Oof. Yeah, spooky stuff, spooky stuff. Charles Brandt, our guest. Nice to have him with us on the program here today. We did a show. Was that a year ago? Maybe a little more? About organized crime in New Kensington. You remember that, Pat Parker? Organized crime in New Kensington. And we had so much comment, feedback after we did that show. I don't know whether we've still got that in the archives or not. Many times during the last week of the year, we revisit some of our, you know, better interviews. Maybe we still have that one. Might get a chance to listen to that again the last week of the year. Okay, anyway, the weather, everybody's worried about that today. 24 degrees now, so we continue to slip, slide right down. We're going to be in the teens before the afternoon has run its course. 24 degrees now, wind picking up. There's a cancellation in the Clarion area. VA Butler Healthcare has canceled a Veterans Town Hall meeting that was to be held this evening at 5 p.m. at the American Legion Hall in Clarion. That has been canceled because of the weather. North of Butler, they've had a lot more snow than we have here. They were plowing snow even in northern Butler County before dawn this morning. Okay, one of our sponsors on the program, more to come, by the way, our final guest will be joining us by telephone, Keetski Hawk, and she's a yoga instructor. I don't know a whole lot about yoga. I know a little bit. She has been using it to help people with addictive behavior. She's a recovering addict herself. She's been a yoga instructor for a long time, many, many, 30 years, I think. Anyway, she's going to be chatting with us about that. We thought with the, you know, have so many addiction problems here in our area, especially opioids these days. Who knows, you know? Family members of those battling addiction are desperate for anything that might help. Some of the people who are addicted are desperate for anything that might help. Could it be yoga? Keetski Hawk says it works. We'll talk to her coming up in just a moment or so here on the It's Your Turn program on WISR. One of our sponsors on the program today is Cummings Candy and the Coffee Shop. Three locations now in Butler. Of course, they have the original Cummings on Main Street, North Main Street downtown, under the red and white awning. Since 1905, Cummings has been roasting coffee and making candy. 1905, over 100 years. They have two other locations now, in addition to under the red and white awning on North Main Street downtown. There's a Cummings at Butler Memorial Hospital, and the Cummings West, the newest location, on Route 68, Evans City Road, right on the outskirts of town. Cummings opens 7 days a week. Peanut brittle is available now. Oh, it's delicious. It's nothing like commercial peanut brittle you might buy in a bag somewhere. And also, terrific gift ideas. Custom gift boxes of chocolate-covered potato chips or pretzels or graham crackers or cherry cordials. It's different, and it's much appreciated. I've given some of this stuff as gifts before. You can add a half-pound bag of Butler's Own proprietary blend of coffee. They call it the Main Street Roast. And you know why? Because it's roasted right there at the Main Street location. That's part of the ambiance of going into Cummings. The aromas of the coffees and the candies and the atmosphere, the beautiful decor inside there, some of it over a century old, mahogany tables. It's wonderful. Cummings. Talk to Barry Cummings if you want information. You know, if you're looking for a lot of gifts, custom orders or whatever, 287-3287. 287-3287. Cummings, candy, and coffee. For gift giving at holiday time.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines should be treated by a sports medicine expert. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers offers sports medicine specialists right here in Butler to get you back to enjoying the activities you love. Doctors Rob Waltrip, Josh Szabo, and John Richmond have trained with some of the biggest names in orthopedic sports medicine and use their expertise to treat you. Tri-Rivers accepts most major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more at TriRiversMSK.com. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, partnering with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
Going to be talking about the use of yoga, listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn. Yoga for dealing with addictive behaviors. If you're just joining us on the It's Your Turn program today here on WISR, welcome. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Kiki Hawk. She is the author of Yogic Tools for Recovery, a guide for working the 12 steps. Kiki, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Nice to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
First of all, you are a certified yoga instructor. What was it that made you decide to write this Yogic Tools for Recovery?
I'm also a woman in recovery from addiction, mm-hmm. and I came to a point in my recovery where the intellectual part of recovery had been satisfied, but it was not sufficient, and I needed to get into the trauma, memories, behavior patterns that were stuck in my body. The physical practice of yoga helped me, and then learning more about the philosophy and the tools that yogis use to remove the afflictions and the obstacles that we have in daily life helped enhance my recovery program. And I combined them, and it seems to work very well together.
Have you been teaching this method for a while?
Yes, 32 years clean and sober. Mm-hmm.
So you have a pretty good feedback loop then in terms of it must be working pretty well for many of your folks.
It is. It truly brought my recovery to a more visceral level. That is, it wasn't just an intellectual process. The 12 steps are a very robust model for looking back at behaviors, determining what's useful and what isn't useful, mm-hmm. Guiding you toward finding your place in society and being a useful member in society. And addiction and what happened before I became an active addict was actually in my nervous system and in my cells. And yoga helped get that recovery down to that deeper level.
Now, are we talking about using yoga and yogic principles to deal with various types of addiction or just specific types?
That's a great question, and it is any type. I think there's 164 different 12-step programs.
Mm-hmm.
So it deals with everything from disordered eating, too much or too little, smoking, gambling, all manner of relationships, debt or overspending of any nature, that there are behaviors and substances that we can become habituated toward that is really a tool to cover up some deep pain that we're experiencing inside.
I know that you are out on the West Coast here in mm-hmm. Western Pennsylvania. We are in the midst of an opioid crisis that is just exploding, and people are desperate to try to find some way to deal with it, either for themselves or for loved ones. Does this method work for people who are addicted to opioids?
Absolutely. We have the crisis out here as well. I teach in jail, and I teach at treatment centers as well, so I'm really familiar with how people come into recovery. Becoming familiar with how your body feels and more less afraid of how you feel coming, you know, particularly in early recovery, you've kind of cut yourself off of all communication with your body. So yoga breath practices and gentle yoga movements are extremely helpful at that point. This book, Yogic Tools for Recovery, is to take your 12-step practice to a deeper level. So it's not for the people in early sobriety. However, breath, meditation, and gentle movement is critical to in early recovery to connect you back with your body in a friendly way, because we've spent so much of our time running away from our physical feelings.
Can you, just in general terms, talk a little bit about the history of the practice of yoga? Do you have an even ballpark figure on how far back it goes?
At least 3,000 years. The yoga that was documented, that was written down, that we look at as the sutras, was the first time it was written was 2,500 years ago by a sage by the name of Patanjali. But it was practiced, it was a word-of-mouth practice for years before that. It came to the United States, or let's say the Western world, in the 50s and 60s. And it was advised, the first practitioners who came over to the States were advised to keep it at the physical practice and not the philosophical practice. And so that's what we know more of. We kind of look at it as an exercise system, when really yoga in all its forms is a healing system.
Did it originate in some specific part of Asia?
In India.
India? Sub-Asian.
Yeah.
The reason that I ask you about that, I knew that it was ancient, but there are still some people who kind of think of yoga as some kind of new age development, and I don't say that to denigrate it, but
no.
I'm sure you've run into people who have told you that, I'm not into this new age stuff.
Yeah, I'm not into this woo-woo yoga.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what they call it, the woo-woo yoga. And I can understand, if you're going to a class that does a lot of chanting using a lot of specific hand gestures or some kind of only teaches in the ancient Sanskrit, you can feel left out. I certainly did. So I prefer myself to do, when I'm doing my physical practice, my asana, meaning the postures, I prefer to be guided with English words so that I'm not struggling with trying to figure out what the heck is going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a spiritual path, not a religious one. So practicing yoga doesn't mean that you have to abandon your faith journey with a more traditional church or house of worship. It's merely an extra tool to expand your understanding of where religions are leading us, which is to deeper into an ethical self and to relieve suffering.
Just a couple more questions before we get to the heart of your book, but I just didn't want to lose anyone who tune us out before they really heard the meat and potatoes of your message, because I think there are a lot of people who do look at yoga that way, and it's they just don't understand what it is. Now, here in this area, we're in Western Pennsylvania. There are a lot of yoga classes that have sprung up in recent years. It seems to be mostly in a group setting. Is that unusual, or can you practice yoga by yourself?
That also is a really good question. Yes, group settings with a skilled teacher, meaning someone who is paying attention, not necessarily one who runs around adjusting, but someone who can guide you in and out of the poses safely, is very useful. And we all look toward, all of us, yoga teachers and yoga students, we look toward developing a home practice. And it's in our home practice that you can begin to listen to your own body guide you through the movement that it needs in order to feel healthy and whole on a daily basis.
Now, for someone who is not familiar with yoga, you begin your book, Yogic Tools for Recovery. In fact, this first chapter, I think, you go over some terms and some principles so that you're kind of, I guess, getting everybody on the same page. Is that why you started that way?
Yes, absolutely, because we've all heard some words or phrases just out in general society. One of the most probably common one is chakras. You know, and we think of chakras as different crystals, and you can see them in the woo-woo stores or the, you know, the the stores that sell, incense and wall hangings and such.
Yeah.
But I go into them in their deeper meaning, what the purpose is, so that later on in the book, when we're working the 12 steps of recovery, the alignment of those words with the steps is a little easier to see. So that first chapter is kind of important.
We need to take a quick break here, listeners. We have some more time to chat with our guest, Keetski Hawk. She is a certified yoga instructor. She lectures on yoga and recovery throughout the Bay Area out in California, and she's done it for quite some time. And for the purposes of our discussion here today, she is the author of a new book entitled Yogic Tools for Recovery, A Guide for Working the 12 Steps. And we'll pick up our conversation with her here on the It's Your Turn program on WISR right after these words.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 4040. The pick 3, 824, 824. The pick 4, 2097. The pick 5, 03376. The wild ball is 7. And the treasure hunt, 7, 9, 12, 19, and 22. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
A quick word from your friends at Butler Motor Tours, a local company on South Monroe Street in Butler, online at butlerbus.com. Your headquarters for deluxe motor coach tours, outstanding show and theater packages, hundreds and hundreds of fun destinations. And with the holiday season upon us, here's a gift-giving idea. How about a gift certificate for Butler Motor Tours? You don't have to select the destination for the person that you're gifting. No. Just give them a gift certificate, and they can put it toward the vacation of their choosing. Get the details at Butler Motor Tours online at butlerbus.com. By the way, they're also taking a one-day trip down to the Pennsylvania Farm Show again on January 7th. Get the details on that at their website, butlerbus.com. For holiday gift giving, yes, Butler Motor Tours, 282-1000 or online at butlerbus.com, butlerbus.com.
Looking for a way to make your company's benefit package a little more competitive? Here's one that's so easy, more than 130 local organizations and businesses have added it to their programs. Membership in Armco Credit Union. At Armco Credit Union, your employees will have access to the best loan rates and more free banking services, while direct deposit and payroll deduction options make it convenient for both of you. And best of all, it doesn't cost you a thing. Learn more at armcocu.com or by calling 284-2020. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is insured by NCUA.
Welcome back. If joining us a little late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR today, that's fine. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest joins us by telephone. She is Keetski Hawk, author of Yogic Tools for Recovery, a guide for working the 12 steps. Your target audience, Keetski, for this book, someone who is battling addiction, or perhaps a family member of someone who's battling addiction?
Both, yes. And there are 12-step groups specifically designed for family members, friends, children of people who are battling addiction or are themselves already in recovery. This book is designed for someone doing the 12 steps of their own recovery program for a second, third, fourth, sixth time. We end up doing these steps many times. It's not for the first time, because it's always wise to do these steps, according to your own, the 12-step manual or book written by your own program the first time to get levels set. Then after that, once we scrape off that first layer of muck, of unskilled action, of pain and memory, we begin to dig a little deeper. And when you begin to dig a little deeper, maybe different types of tools might be necessary. And this is that tool for that deeper investigation.
Forgive my lack of a great deal of knowledge about the practice of yoga. I have not studied it. Can you tell me, is this something that you do every day or several times a day or once a week? Fill me in on that.
Okay, I'm smiling really big. In my heart, I practice yoga all the time.
Ah.
And why? Because I'm trying, it's kind of like a method of paying attention. The physical practice of yoga is a lovely daily practice, whether it's for 20 minutes or an hour and a half. Breath practices and meditation are useful every day. You can't do them too frequently. There are some days when I pause and meditate two or three times a day because it's a rough day and I just want to put a little comma in the day, a little pause, so that I can return refreshed to whatever's coming down the pike next.
Mm-hmm.
General, people go to a yoga, if they're going to do the physical practice, many people go two or three times a week. It doesn't need to be an everyday thing.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering about that because I knew that meditation was part of your plan, and in my experience at least, that takes a little time. You can't just say, okay, now I'm going to spend the next 5 minutes in meditation. You kind of have to, at least it's been my experience, you kind of have to work your way into that. You know, you have to de-stress, you have to become calm, and then maybe you can have a successful period of meditation. Am I different than a lot of other people that way?
No, and again, I'm smiling because it does take practice. However, once you know the practice, you can meditate for 2 minutes in your vehicle before you go into a job interview. You can meditate for 2 minutes before you open your lunch bag at lunchtime. You can find that moment of peace and calm, that intentional moment of disengagement, to revitalize yourself. A serious, 20-minute, 30-minute, 45-minute or day-long meditation practice is certainly available, but you don't have to wait until you have that much time. Once you know how to get settled and breathe and be kind to yourself and your thoughts.
And what about the physical movements, or, and forgive me if I'm using an incorrect term, what about the poses that we often associate, those of us who are laypersons, associate with yoga? How do they figure into and work with meditation? Obviously, people who have practiced this for hundreds and hundreds, thousands of years have determined that certain poses or certain movements are helpful.
Absolutely. I tell students that the yoga comes before the meditation because it's the way to get your P and V's out, to get your wiggles out, to allow your body to be more comfortable in stillness. Sometimes we still have a lot of energy flowing through the body, and it's hard to sit still. So just a few movements, moving your spine in six directions, a fold, an arch, a twist, an arc from side to side, slowly moving, stretching the body, can get the flibberty gibbets out so that you can sit quietly and listen. It's also critical for the body to move. It is necessary to stretch the body. every single day, whether it's just you're stretching your arms above your head as you yawn when you get out of bed, and then maybe a few little, you know, ways to get the cricks and cracks out of your shoulders and upper back as you, you know, go to your closet to choose your shirt for the day. That's all part of it.
That's all part of it. It's a good example because most people do that without thinking about it, really.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. It's just bringing mindful attention to it to say, oh, yeah, this is what I'm doing right now. I'm stretching. I'm flaring my elbows out to the side. I'm lifting my chin or dropping my chin to my chest and stretching the back of my neck. Like, oh, I'm doing yoga.
Are there any current findings or research that support yoga as a promising therapy for addictive behaviors?
There is very little written research on the yoga poses themselves with people in recovery because we are a hard population to track, particularly with the anonymous programs. By not being able to identify yourself, you are not easily tracked for like a follow-up period of a year or 2 years later. And because the poses are so individual, it's hard to say that this sequence is going to address recovery from opioids. You know, it because each person is individual and we also all have had our own accidents and injuries. Therefore, our bodies move in different ways. So you would need a specific sequence with specific languaging with a specific population that would stay stable for periods of time. We as yoga teachers and instructors and lecturers wish fervently that a college would step forward and we could work collaboratively in order to come up with some evidence-based studies because it is needed. I think that it would be more generally accepted. You know, insurance companies and doctors ask you to do yoga, but they won't pay for your yoga. So, you know, we're kind of in this limbo position. But that's a great question, and it describes a longing. You know, where are the evidence-based studies, and how can we be part of it? How can we help?
Are there any age limitations for the practice of yoga? Can you be too old, too young?
No, you cannot be neither too young nor too old. I practice yoga with my grandkids, and I have taught classes to people even older than myself. There are so many modifications available. I have a brother in a wheelchair, and I do yoga with him. And I've done yoga with the dying, who have very little movement in their body, but the breath and just rotating hands around wrists and feet around ankles can be extremely helpful in finding peace in every breath we have.
One final question. What makes your book different from others? How is your book unique, Kietzke?
Well, my book is unique in that I'm combining the two, the yoga and the 12 steps in a very specific way. I do have a workbook coming out in May so that the questions that I pose in the book have been expanded with space for writing so that you don't have to just have an auxiliary notebook with the yogic tools for recovery. They're kind of combined and expanded into a workbook that's coming out in May. So I think it's pretty unique in that it's so specific. And it is appropriate for, as you mentioned earlier, not just for addicts, but for their families. So it's pretty broad. It has a broad audience.
The title again, listeners, especially for those who may have joined us a little bit late, the title is Yogic Tools for Recovery, A Guide for Working the 12 Steps. The author is a recovering addict herself and a certified yoga instructor. Her name is Kietzke Hawk. Nice to meet you, Kietzke. Nice to talk with you today. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Fishing is the thrill of the catch, being outdoors and creating special memories with family and friends. But most of all, fishing is pure fun.
With 2018 fishing licenses now available, make sure to take advantage of the convenience and savings with a multi-year fishing license from the Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission. And for the angler in your life, fishing licenses make great holiday gifts. So share the fun of fishing by giving the gift of fishing. Get your multi-year fishing license, voucher, and gift certificates today at GoneFishingPA.com.
Curious about the world around